You think we're simple, you think we're not bright. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. Here we are at Episode 9 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Going to the Wheat Academy, which is exactly what 75 farmers and crop consultants did last December. The Wheat Academy is organized by the Dryland Cropping Systems team at Washington State University, led by wheat scientist Drew Lyon. The syllabus for the two-day academy changes every year, but in 2016, courses included the science behind the low-falling numbers crisis, what is gene editing and how can it deliver for agriculture, the importance of spray particle size on pesticide efficacy, wheat plant growth state. Classes were held in a succession of modern-looking classrooms and laboratories on the first floor of the O.A. Vogel Plant Genetics Building on WSU's Pullman campus. The event is taught by WSU and Agricultural Research Service scientists, together with extension staff and outside experts. I'm leading the program off with an overview of the Wheat Academy, but stay tuned because a little more than 6 minutes in, I have an interview with Camille Stieber, one of the Northwest's few falling number experts. As I was assembling the pieces of this podcast on the Academy a couple of months after the event, I came across Brad Tompkins' voice. Brad and I know each other because he served on the Washington Wheat Commission back when I was still a reporter. At one time, Brad was involved in the seed business, but he's a full-time farmer now. We chatted and did a quick, perfectly serviceable interview, but after I talked to a few other people, Tompkins came back up. He wanted to add to his answer about why he drove up from Walla Walla County and spent a night in a motel to attend the Wheat Academy. I thought his answer would resonate with a lot of farmers and deserves to lead off the program.
I just think in an environment where $4 wheat net to the grower, you got to look for every little thing you can do in your production system to try to stay in the business. Really, that's it.
Yes, it is. The bottom line can't ever be ignored. If you aren't farming to make a profit, you're gardening. Brian Meyer came to the Wheat Academy from the business side. He's an account manager and certified crop advisor at the McGregor Company. I asked him why he was attending.
It's a good refresher to go through different topics in the downtime and just kind of building your knowledge base for the next season.
And the word of mouth among McGregor personnel didn't hurt.
Certainly, yes. We have had other individuals who have attended this who have thought very highly of the Wheat Academy, so I was excited to be able to come and experience it.
I worked closely with Drew Lyon, a weed scientist, during our lead-up to a special section on weed resistance published in the Washington Grain Commission section of the October 2016 edition of Wheat Life. It had a football theme. I'm going to put the section up on our Facebook page because it's worth a second look. Yes, even for people with no interest in football. The reason I bring up the experience of working with Lyon is because a project under deadline can often bring out the worst in people. Needless to say, Lyon was a delight. Unflappable is an adjective I would apply to him. Farmers who are looking for answers to challenges on their farm couldn't do better than to give him a call. I'll put his email and office number on our Facebook page. I asked Lyon how the Wheat Academy had changed over the last 3 years.
When we started the inaugural year back in 2013, or would that be 14, we had mostly crop consultants with a few farmers. And then the next year we had, I think we were about 25 farmers and 50 crop consultants. And this year we're pretty much even, Steven, 38, 37. We changed the pricing this year, so it's a little less expensive for growers and a little more expensive for crop consultants. And I think it just took longer to get the word out to the growers. Crop consultants are looking for classes like this, And so they were aware of it before the farmers were, but I think the word's getting out now. We're pretty much evenly split between the two groups.
Lyon also said the time between the announcement of the dates for the next class and it filling up has shortened considerably. In its inaugural year, it took 2 months to fill 60 spots. In 2015, the number of slots was boosted to 75, and it only took 3 weeks to close registration. Then in 2016, again with 75 openings, it took just 8 days to sell out. Sounds more like a ticket to a rock concert than a weed academy. But to Drew, that's the point. There is a pent-up demand for the information he and his crew are providing farmers and consultants. Evaluation surveys after the first year indicated participants wanted to go deeper with longer classes. Weed Academy responded.
We go a lot more in depth than we do in a normal extension type meeting. It's not a 1,000-foot ceiling kind of thing. It's getting down and really understanding why we make the recommendations we do and what the science behind those recommendations are. One of the comments I heard the most was it wasn't long enough. People wanted to have more time to really get down into the information. So that's actually one of the suggestions we took. And then the next year and this year, the sessions are now an hour and a half long. Instead of offering 5 classes a day, we offer 4, and they're each an hour and a half long. So we get a little more time to get into depth.
Although some classes are similar from year to year, enough of them are taught concurrently that it's impossible to attend them all. In addition, Lyon and his team are always looking to switch things up. In 2016, there was a focus on falling numbers. Camille Stieber, a molecular geneticist with the Agricultural Research Service of the USDA, conducted classes on the phenomenon, explaining the science behind good old-fashioned pre-harvest sprout, as in what occurs when rain falls on a crop about to be harvested, and late maturity alpha amylase, or what's called LMA. That's a phenomenon which is triggered when there's a wide variation between morning and afternoon temperatures for a period of time following flowering in the spring. Even though it's different from pre-harvest sprouting, in terms of where it occurs in the seed, late maturity alpha amylase, LMA, causes a similar effect, which also causes low falling numbers. Remember, low falling numbers are bad because they compromise the end-use functionality of the flower and the products the flower is made into. Customers have established a falling number score of 300 as the threshold for soft white wheat, below which discounts can begin to be applied. More than 40% of the soft white wheat crop in 2016 was affected by low falling numbers, and while the total damage isn't known, individual farmers report losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. I caught up with Stieber on a break between classes and asked her what she wants farmers and consultants to take away from her presentation.
Hopefully I'm helping people to understand better instead of making them more confused, but they're learning about the effects of storage, say, on falling number. They're learning about the effects of falling number on sponge cake quality. So I think we were able to put together a really nice demonstration with Craig Morris and Doug Engel over at the Western Wheat Quality Lab. They baked sponge cakes from a set of samples that contained different amounts of sprouted grain, and the class determined the falling numbers of the flour that was used to bake the sponge cakes. So they were able to put the two things together and see that actually even a small decrease in falling number can cause you to have a small dip in the sponge cake, which is considered unacceptable, for example, by our customers in Japan.
She's also been evaluating research which showed that storage has a positive effect on falling numbers.
Two studies that I like to refer to when I think about this. One was a master's thesis from Andrew Ross's lab that will eventually be published. And the other was a study from Bianchi Bake's lab. Bianchi Bake actually used to be at WSU and he's moved on since then. And both of those studies said that at higher temperatures, falling numbers will tend to increase with storage.
But we're talking about extremely higher temperatures. I mean, I looked at that study and it was
95 degrees, you had an increase of 35 seconds over 5 months.
Okay, but 95 degrees in the fall of the year after you've harvested is almost impossible.
Well, it might be hot, though, when you harvest in July and August. And when I was talking with a farmer named Craig Druffel, he said that actually the grain holds its temperature quite a while in a home storage bin. And he did see an increase in his falling number with storage. You have to be realistic about it. You're talking, 20 to 30 seconds, something like that.
20 to 30 seconds can be 20 to 30 cents.
Okay. and it varies. I've heard stories, too, where people said that it looked like the falling number went down. And I think a lot of that is due to the big variability in falling number in the grain that we harvested this year. I think that's been the major story this year has been, within a single trial, a single field, we've seen a great deal of variation in the falling number of a single variety within different positions within one field. I think it was just the nature of the weather that we had this year that it was so variable. The LMA itself is notorious for causing a high degree of variability. And we had LMA followed by sprout in many cases. So by half seed assays, we were able to tell that, for example, in Pullman, we had two varieties that had low falling numbers due to sprout. The other 20 were all LMA.
Oh, so that's interesting, because when this initially came to the fore, we were thinking it was maybe 50-50.
Yeah, well, and then Anatone, it was four varieties that were sprout, and the remaining 15 were something like were LMA. So in a single location, we're seeing both.
Fascinating. So I was just talking to one of the participants here, and he said that he will change his variety choices as a result of listening to your presentation. Is that what you're hoping for?
What I'm really hoping for is that we give farmers more choices that have more stable falling numbers. The thing that I've learned is that there are some varieties that are remarkably stable for their falling numbers, but if you talk with a wheat breeder about it, you wind up finding that you always have to balance the benefit of higher falling numbers against possible minuses. We have a lot of varieties that are resistant to low falling numbers, but for example, they'll be snow mold susceptible.
Well, there has been a lot of Briel planted. Even though it was the variety that perhaps suffered the most from LMA and sprout. How do you make sense of that?
I think that the farmers know what they need. So Briel emerges well from deep planting. It has excellent resistance to stripe rust and to snow mold. And at this point, we don't have a variety that completely replaces that.
I've heard a lot of explanations for how we wound up with the LMA anomaly in our Northwest germplasm, the stuff breeders use to cross and develop new varieties. I asked Stieber what she had found during her scientific scavenging hunt. The first paper she could find referencing the LMA phenomenon was published in 1966.
They didn't know what it was. They just described that they had a problem with falling number when there had been no rain. And gradually, that began to be characterized more. Papers from the UK, from Mike Gale's lab, from Daryl Mares' lab in Australia. It was really in the 90s that they made a lot of progress with this understanding this trait and the genetics of this trait. And the thought is that it originated from what is called synthetic wheat. So in order to bring in new sources of disease resistance, crosses were done to wild relatives of wheat. Those new wheat lines were crossed then into breeding lines. They brought in new sources of disease resistance, but they didn't realize they were bringing this other trait in at the same time. And according to to review articles and mapping studies from the Mares lab, there are as many as six different genes that can cause this problem. I don't yet know which of those genes we have in our varieties. That's a high priority for us is to figure that out so that we can have good molecular markers.
So you're saying the next step in your research is to find out what those genes are, identify them, and then make sure they're not in future varieties.
That's right. To give breeders an early warning tool. If we know what the genes are and we have good linked molecular markers, they can screen early breeding lines. Right now, I'm only testing, you know, what they call their elite breeding lines, so they're one step away from being considered for release. And frankly, that's really late in their breeding programs. At that point, something like 10 to 15 years of work has gone into those lines. You can imagine how popular I am with the wheat breeders when I come back and say, you know that wonderful, high-yielding, disease-resistant line? It has LMA really badly. Oh, they hate me.
Australia has been the canary in the coal mine when it comes to falling numbers. Scientists there have been working on a fix for nearly 30 years. I asked Stieber where Australia is now compared to the U.S.
They have reached the point where they have, you cannot reach release a variety in Australia without proving that it's resistant to LMA. So they became aware of the problem during the late 80s and during the 90s, and I guess very popular varieties were released that still had that trait. They believe that the prevalence of LMA in their cultivars is one of the reasons that their varieties, that their wheat is not as good as ours. So we're a little bit ahead of them as it is, which is good news, right? If we take it seriously and we select against this, we should be able to steer ourselves back into a position where the vast majority of our cultivars are resistant, and we're going to be able to stay competitive in terms of that Asian market.
If you want to learn more about falling numbers and its impact on the industry, I'll be putting together another podcast on the topic. Mike Miller, chairman of the Washington Grain Commission, recently moderated a discussion during Spokane Farm Forum that included Ty Jessup, grain merchandiser for Central Washington Grain Growers, Don Potts, manager of the Eastern Region of the Washington State Grain Inspection Division, and Aaron Carter, winter wheat breeder at Washington State University. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you'll try to get enrolled in the next Wheat Academy. Lyon tells me folks should begin watching for an announcement of the 2017 event around the 1st of September. Go to smallgrains.wsu.edu to find out more. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, thanking you for listening and hoping you'll join me next time for Wheat All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not bright. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.